Hi there. I'm Eric Ward Weaver Shervin, Goldie of the Ridgar Folk here in East Texas, and I would like to welcome you to The Raven's Call. This is a show where I ramble on about different heathen-related subjects, just whatever strikes my fancy at the time, sets my mind on fire, and I just feel like talking about. So, obviously, big UPG warning at the beginning of the episode. Everybody, if you're taking shots, do it now. Big UPG warning. People have joked to me about making drinking games about the different things that I say, like etc., 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 and big UPG warning and stuff like that. So it's like, okay, I get it. It's funny. Don't kill yourselves because I repeat things a lot and you'll get alcohol poisoning. So don't do that. Anyway, big UPG warning at the beginning of this episode, like always. This is just the views of one heathen Goethe here in East Texas. These are my views. These are not reflective of the views of greater heathenry as a whole. I am not the end-all be-all expert on anything. It's simply how I view the world and how I have built my worldview over years of study and experience. I've been a heathen for, I've lost count, since I was a teenager and before. So anyway, the gist here is that take it as you will. Hopefully it's just meant to be a conversation starter. It's meant to be, hey, here's something for you to think about so that you can continue to build your worldview based on what you think and how you respond to these ideas. They're prompts more than anything else. So make of it what you will, okay? I do not claim to be any kind of like Asa Pope or anything like that. I'm not like that. Okay, all right, so onwards and upwards. Housekeeping stuff. Down below, subscribe, ding the bell. Help us keep pushing those subscribers higher. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. All my contact information is down below. Mailing address, email, Facebook group, all that stuff. You can buy my book online. If you're not familiar with that, I do have a book out, storybook, heathen storybook, based on kind of my heathen worldview. And it's the Saga of Bjorn Thorolfsson. You will see links for it down below. It is in ebook format as well as paperback. So all that down below. Feel free, give it a look if you'd like. Now, let's jump into today's subject. Now, today's subject is a little weird because I hadn't really planned on it, other than the fact that one of my near folk community, a dear friend of mine, Miss Dawn, sent me a TikTok. You wouldn't think you'd find a bunch of heathen stuff on TikTok, but you would be surprised. There's actually a goodly bit. I've toyed around with it just a little bit. I haven't put anything up yet. But I'm thinking about playing around with some heathen stuff on TikTok. And I just got to play with the app a bit and figure it out. But anyway, she sent me this TikTok and this guy's talking about, and I don't have his name and stuff on here to reference for you because that was hours ago and it became an idea to do a show much well after I'd watched the video. Anyway, he's talking about the Fae and whether or not the Fae exist in North America and kind of his take on things. Now, he's not heathen per se. He's generally neo-pagan from what I can tell because he's got kind of a neo-pagan attack on things. But it got me to thinking, how would I explain the presence of the Fae in North America and how that plays out? Well, after fashion, I've already talked about it to a certain extent, but let's talk about specifically the Fae. Because the Fae in general are a term that's applied to spirits in the kind of UK, Wales, Ireland, Scotland areas, and almost specifically tied to the Seelie and Unseelie courts. I mean, when you're talking about the Fae, that's usually what you're talking about. But Fae itself is, you know, a term for fairy, and fairy are Vaetir. They are just a subset of Vaetir. So when asked the question, what do I think about the presence of the Fae in North America? Well, my answer is multifaceted. There's a lot that goes into it because on the one hand, you are talking about, there's some strong belief that spirits would follow people because they want to see new adventures, they want to see new things, they're tied to these particular individuals, and they want to follow them and stay with them, like in the case of Húsvetir and whatnot. And yes, I'm aware that it's dubious as to whether or not Húsvetir predate the conversion to Christianity because it doesn't appear in any of the source material before that, only in folk tales and whatnot. Well, here's the deal. Folk tales existed post the conversion because nobody wrote folk tales down before then. No, I know we don't have necessarily hard evidence, but there is evidence of household gods that predates the conversion to Christianity. And so the role of the Húsvetir as far as, you know, if you're thinking about the modern incarnation of Tomten Nissa, that's one thing. But when you're talking about the hearth god, when you're talking about the spirit of the home, the spirit of the land, that is a concept that very much predates Christianity. I just may have been manifested through different terminology and things like that. A lot of the terminology that we have for things is modern application of old sounding words. They're not always old words. Sometimes they're just old sounding. Sometimes it's a modern concept that's given a vaguely Scandinavian name and then is applied retroactively. Because we see the patterns and we're just giving it a name now where it didn't necessarily have a name before. That doesn't mean that the phenomenon didn't exist before. Like Innangarth and Utangarth, those are modern terms that are given a vaguely Scandinavian name, but they're modern terms. The concept as broken down that way was not enumerated in Archean times, but it is very much a thing that you can watch in the behavior of others. It is an observational thing just in society in general. This is kind of how this works and how the process of weird and luck is tied together. And so yes, you have to do some extrapolating, but it is there. It's deeper thought kind of stuff. So all of that to come back to, I was corrected on one of my things saying, you know, the Húsvetir aren't intrinsically heathen. I'm like, well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, it's a Northern European thing. It's a folk tradition. And a lot of those folk traditions predate the conversion to Christianity. They just weren't enumerated in the surviving sources because the surviving sources hit big stuff. They didn't hit microcosm stuff. They didn't hit the practices of the household. They didn't hit, you know, the exact folk beliefs of the individuals in any particular region, because they were focused on kings, they were focused on the sagas of Iceland, they were focused on conversionary periods, they were written down by non-heathens in non-heathen times, things like this, okay? So keep in mind that some of this is just because of the foggy, hazy nature of Northern Europe. Archaeological digs and stuff do lend credence to the household god elements and stuff, which does tie to the Húsvetir in that route as far as the hearth god goes. And then, of course, what we see now is a modern... We continue learning. You know, it's okay to continue learning. The ancestors didn't have all of the answers. It's okay to continue learning and continue growing and to delve deeper into an understanding of the world around you based on what previous generations have been able to figure out. And that's kind of a case of what we've got going on here, which brings us full circle back to the Fae, because there is evidence that, and there's some mention of, that the household spirits would follow along with the family because they were tied to a family more so than a house in some instances. In some instances, they were more tied to a location than they were the individuals that resided within that location. It just varies and depends. Sometimes it's tied to the house itself, and especially if you take the like god posts or the main pillars from the house and relocate them, then the spirit may travel with that post as the spirit of the home to the new location. It's too broad and too complicated to narrow down to one specific example because there's a myriad of different variables at play as to whether or not a spirit might choose to follow that family or remain tied to where they were with the land. So that's a campfire conversation that will go back and forth for like 6 hours because there's just tons of anecdotes that you can go down and play with. So anyway, the gist here is that yes, there is an element of people may have brought them along, may have brought them to the new world with them in the instance of some things like Húsvetir, Nisa Tomta, or even some of the other Vetir spirits that may have come along with either as, you know, through the animals that they may have brought over with them, or spirits that were fascinated by this exodus and this exploration of new and that wanted to go do the same themselves. And so they're like, hey, I'm going to follow these people and see what they're doing. These kind of things are a deal. You know, you would obviously bring your Fylgje with you because it's tied to you. It's tied to the family line. And the Fylgje is a spiritual entity. And so it would have interactions with the spirit world around it and communications with the rest of the family line, which may be back in old world. You get the idea. There's some interactions there that could lead to an encouragement for spirits to come over here. But this land already had spirits of its own. They already had Vetir of their own. They already had, their fairies and their spirit animals and all of that already here. The Native Americans spent generations learning the names of them and building relationships with them. And so it's very helpful to look sometimes at, for as far as the regional influences of Vates here in the areas, to look at some of what the Native Americans have learned, or any Native religion, folkway for any part of the world in which you live. I have to keep reminding myself, I do have overseas listeners, so shout out to all of you, you're awesome. And I say listeners because there is a contingent of people that only listen to me on the podcast version. So, bully for you too. Shout out to the podcast people. You're awesome. So anyway, there are already spirits here. There are already Vates here. Now, this is where we get into nomenclature things, because the Fae are Vates here. They're spirit entities that flip back and forth between the realm of spirit and the realm of the material, depending on the level of Vates here they are, how abstract their energy is, etc., etc. And not all Vates here are Fae, but all Fae are Vates here. Does that make sense? Because the Fae themselves are Vates here. But when you break it down, when we use the term Fae, it's a name that we have given to a subset of Vates here that is native to the UK area. Okay? We're talking largely about the Seelie and Unseelie courts, very Celtic, very Welsh, very old school Britain, the spirits of that land. You're talking about Albion and whatnot back in the day, prior to invasions and conquering of England and unification of England, for that matter. You've got all of these different folk traditions that center around these Fae, these fairy courts, and there's enough cross culturally there throughout the Isles that you get a pretty good idea that this is a lot of people seeing the same thing and interpreting it either with different names or whatever. Even Shakespeare is influenced by this in his Midsummer Night's Dream, because the fairy court that he utilizes with Oberon, Titania, Puck, all of this is tied back to the Fae and the Fae courts of old England, old Albion. And so you end up with a subset of Vates here that, yes, some of that subset may have transitioned over to North America, but it's somewhat unlikely because they are very ensconced and very entrenched over there in the UK. That's kind of how Vates here work. They tend to be tied to their land and to their region. And so, yeah, it's possible that the Fae may have come over here, but it's also very unlikely that many of them would have come over and set up shop over here. But that doesn't mean that you don't have their cousins around, all right? You may see a red cap cousin running around here, but that doesn't necessarily make him Unseelie court. It's just simply, they can be cousins, they can be relatives. We have Vaetir over here that manifest in different ways, because, I mean, you see manifestations in North America of Vaetir in, you know, the ways that the Native Americans have seen them for ages. We're talking about coyote and crow and things like that. All of these are Vaetir spirits that we would also have recognized in the old world, and in ravens and stags and things like that, that do appear in folk tales, folk traditions. Because a lot of this stuff is reflected in folk tradition and not in, say, the academic side of things, because it was brushed off as superstition largely. This wasn't significant enough for them to write down. People that wrote down things like the Poetic Edda and the, you know, Snorri with his Prose Edda and the Heimskringla, these are interested in kings and gods. These are not interested in mundanity, such as, you know, the spirit realm and our interactions there. But we see some influences in the Icelandic sagas, because they do branch off more into the supernatural side of things, but a lot of this was pushed away to fairy tales and folk tales, and that was how it survived. You know, when you get down to the Grimm Brothers stuff, there's a lot of folk tradition that was survived in the Grimm Brothers stories. Now, they took some liberties with the retelling of the stories, but there's some core elements there that are intrinsic to the societies and folk traditions of the time that are ubiquitous throughout the stories and are so commonplace that we can fairly well tell that it was just kind of an accepted thing, a superstition of the time, as it were. So there's a lot that we learn about the spirit realm from looking at folk traditions, because that's not the realm of academic study frequently, unless that's specifically what the academic is studying. And if they're studying that, then they're looking more at, you know, pacing the course of a story, where it may have come from, what the cultural influences are, what these different characters may represent in a macro and micro level, breaking it down, what does the color blue mean, that kind of thing. Whereas, you know, there are others of us out there that are going, is this a real creature that somebody was trying to, you know, relate in this story? Was the belief in, you know, Rumpelstiltskin, you know, the little man with magic and powers, Aetir dude who bounces back and forth and uses his abilities to play tricks, is very fey in the way he goes about making his dealings and then the hidden rules and everything. That's very, very fey, but he's not considered part of the Seelie Unseelie court. See where I'm getting with that? So, as we continue to build these things, and we look at the folk tales that build, we see things in the U.S. that fall into the realm of Vaetir, but are on the similar levels to things like the Fae over there. Like in Scandinavia, you've got a different subset of fairy creatures, cryptids. So that's typically what these things are referred to as. You get into things like the Skolxa, which that's a hard one to pronounce. S-K-O-G-R. Skogra, I think is what it is. I don't think there's an extra S in there. Skogra. Anyway, these are the ladies with the bark for a back. They would lure men into the woods, all voluptuous and pretty-like, and then they would lure these weak-willed men into the woods, and then when they got them deep, deep in the woods, they would turn their back to them and blend into the trees, so the man would then get lost and be lost in the woods. That is such a fae thing to do. That is such a fae thing to do. There's Nikken, there's so many different Scandinavian fae. They're not fae, they're not part of the fae courts, but they're the same as far as being these ethereal, cryptid type entities that are spirits, that kind of flip between the material and immaterial, from the physical and the spiritual planes. They can kind of go back and forth. Some may be more rooted in the physical plane, but have ties to the spiritual plane. It just varies. I mean, you get into things like mermaids. I mean, the Greeks had tons of them. People all across the world have had these things pop up. Are all of them true? No, probably not. But are at least some of them? Yeah, probably, because as the bard once said, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies. We're talking about, you know, Shakespeare there, saying there's a lot more than meets the eye, man. It's Transformers. Anyway, sorry, showing my age there. But yes, there is. I fully believe in the existence of the Vaetir and the manifestations that we see and interpret as cryptids, because in the U.S., we see things like Bigfoot, skunk ape, you know, things like this, chupacabra, you know, the Jersey Devil. And we've got a ton of these things that manifest all throughout. And yes, some of them are just urban legends. Some of them are flat out hoaxes and have been proven to be hoaxes. And so you can't believe all of them. But some of them are ubiquitous enough that you kind of have to question, you know? No, we can't prove it, but you're going to be hard-pressed to nail down the physical presence of something that can flip back and forth between the spiritual realm and this realm, because they may not have as physical a presence to capture in, say, cameras or recordings. Their influence may be far more psychological, and, you know, it gets complicated. And I've got tons of theories on Fairy and Vaetir when it comes to these kind of things, but back to the question at hand, back at the subject at hand, because this is just fun. It's a fun little diatribe. But anyway, are there fae in North America? Maybe, but probably not a lot. What we have here are North American Vaetir that are on the same level as the fae. That may be, some of them are as organized, maybe some of them are not. You know, it just depends. You've got a very isolated area over there in the UK, so the Vaetir there built up their own kind of little thing. And so it's very insular, very much their own kind of rules and whatnot, plus lots of interactions with humans over there. So there's plenty of playroom there to expand the stories and the ideas. In some of the more sparse and rural areas, where things aren't so condensed as far as populations and whatnot, didn't necessarily have a lot of villages all up on each other, these stories become a little bit more sparse and a little more dubious, simply because they didn't survive as well, and there's fewer interactions with the spirits in question because they may very well be tied to a very specific location as far as that spirit. It doesn't mean there's not other spirits in other areas. It just means, like, for instance, if we're talking about Bigfoot, the spirits that we regard as Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever, may be tied to specific areas. And so that's why you see them in those areas, but they may flip back and forth between the physical and the spiritual realm, and that makes them harder to nail down. Now, I have been called a fantasist before. Some of my not fans, people that don't like what I do, have accosted me in saying that I am nothing but a fantasist and that I don't. I'm not recon enough for them. I'm off in La La Land and playing in the woo-woo, but you guys kind of like my woo-woo stuff, and this is my worldview. This is how I see the world. Yes, I believe in spirits. Yes, I believe in the Fae. Yes, I believe in the unseen. Doesn't mean that I have hard proof of it, but I have enough interactions with the Vaetir in my own area that I full well completely believe that they're there. Do I believe all of the stories that have been passed down? No. No, no, no. It's too easy to write a story about it. It's too easy to pass something down. It's too easy to make something up. It's simple, it's easy, you can do that. But there was an inspiration there from somewhere. So yes, I do believe they exist. No, I don't believe that we know everything about them. I don't think that what we have enumerated in writing and in the stories that have been passed down is complete. You know, I don't think that we have a complete understanding. I don't think that all of the stories we have depicting them are accurate. But hey, that's how we try and understand. The arts are how people play with and understand the abstract, those things that are not easily nailed down by science, by philosophy. The arts are how we do what ifs and we play these things out. Science fiction is a huge what if world where we have played out concepts that have later become technology that we have today. I mean, Star Trek back in the day had, you know, video conferencing, it had space travel, which we have now. I mean, Elon Musk is basically pumping out shuttles now. There's a lot of things that took place in Star Trek that are manifested now. 3D printers are kind of an influence from Star Trek, you know, the replicator aspect of things. So there's a lot of things there that just, that's how we explore things. That's why storytelling is so important, is because that's how we wrap our heads around those things that are not easily codified. So yeah, you're going to end up with folk stories that are not 100% true, but are inspired by something that was there. There's a grain of truth back there somewhere, and you got to find them. Some of them are just wholesale made up out of, you know, sand and cloth. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a thing. It's another one of my tags, so I know. Somebody just took a drink. Anyway, so, and this was just a fun little side diatribe thing. I'm not going to belabor the point because, you know, it's not that complicated a thing, but it's a fun little thing. I like to talk about these things occasionally because we do get off in some of these more serious subjects and we stay hardcore on, like, the societal things, the religious things, and every once in a while it's fun to come back to the elements of our, I say our, I mean, it's, that's a globalization. Tribal culture is fleshed out by these kind of folk traditions, by these kind of folk beliefs. That's a large part of what differentiates one tribe from another. Yeah, we can get down to the basics on how we view the religion side of things, how we build our societal side of things, but folk traditions are a huge part of the culture of a tribe. And how you develop those things, well, that's kind of up to you. Not my hall, not my call. Another one of my tags. So, yeah, no, I don't believe that the Fae are here. I mean, I don't think you're going to run into the Seelie and Unseelie court in East Texas, per se. I think you are more likely to run into Vaetir of that level out in the woods. Spirits and entities tied to the location that take on the flavor and influence of that location, or perhaps that location takes on the flavor and influence of them. It's a chicken and the egg kind of thing. And so they're very much tied to the space, you know. Of course, the spirits that, you know, permeate the UK are going to be different than the spirits that permeate Texas, or from the spirits that permeate Wisconsin, or the spirits that permeate Scandinavia. It's a thing. So, that was just kind of a fun little side. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you guys didn't all unsubscribe the minute I started talking about woo-woo out there fairy stuff, but it's a thing that I think about, and this particular TikTok video set me off on TikTok, of all things. Gave me an idea for a show. So we'll see. Anyway, hail to you all. Thank you. We'll get back to some more hard stuff here in the future. I just wanted to do this one because it was fun, and this is for me. It's because I wanted to talk about it. So thank you for making it through. If you did, I appreciate it. Hail to you all. May your hearth fires burn bright.